Welcome to Accounting High.
She sounded like you smiled when you said when I said the million mark. Is that?
I mean, that sounds sexy, right? Like when you start your business, I feel like $1 million is that first big milestone. You want to get to 500K, then you want to get to that $1 million mark. It just sounds sexy as hell. So it was definitely on my mind.
Class is in session. It's time for Shopperations at Accounting High. Class is in session. It's time for Shopperations at Accounting High. Kids, hybrid teams, for Pete's sake, I'm trying to manage through screens, but I can't figure out which Zoom window's my next meeting. Well, since 2012, my firm's been in the cloud. Join us as we go deep. I'll try not to run it to the ground. We're sharing profit and loss and managing back office. The tax staff just quit, tried to hire on LinkedIn, no luck. And scope creep team count cast, automate tax, compliance transactions, ID and bottlenecks. Come on, ops. Scotty, wait a minute. It's my firm, dog. I know, and I said you could run it however you want.
Introducing the star of our show,
Andrea McDonald and Scotty.
We're going to have a problem here.
Class is in session, students. I am here with a dear friend of mine, Andrea McDonald. She's a practice owner from Chesapeake, Virginia. The firm is ProTax Accountants. Very original firm name you got there. Did you make up your name for your firm name?
Yeah.
Andrea's firm is growing. It has been gone through a lot of changes since we first met, Andrea. We met in Toronto in 2022. And I saw a spark in your eye. Actually, I learned you were growing a practice yourself. You had a few employees, and you were hungry to acquire a new business. Since then, you have acquired another practice. You have also experienced somewhat of a merger amalgamation as of recent news. This is all new. This is all great. We're going to talk about all of it today at Shopperations at Accounting High. But Andrea, first, I want you to tell me, how or why did you become a CPA in the first place? Why accounting?
I was actually a nursing major, so I did everything backwards. I got married and had babies and then decided maybe college was a good idea. And I was actually a nursing major, and I had to take an accounting course as an elective, and that accounting 101 literally changed my life. I sat in that class day one, and it was like fireworks, light bulbs went off, everything just made sense. I knew nursing was clearly not going to be the right choice for me, and I immediately changed my major. And so I've been working in accounting ever since. That was, I don't know, carry the two, like 20.
What was it about nursing that you decided wasn't your thing anymore?
So I hadn't even really gotten into the nursing, like the core nursing courses. But when I took that accounting class, I just knew that nothing else was going to be as good of a fit. It was just like, there was no question.
I
the next day went to my advisor and changed my major. Like this,
everything
is
clicked. Everything made sense. This
debits
is what
and credits,
I am meant to do.
Yes. Debits and credits. They just made sense.
It's
like
perfect
the yin and the
symmetry.
Yang.
Perfect symmetry. A puzzle. There's always a right answer. Everything else just becomes a little bit easier when you kind of like what you're doing, right? Tell me about that experience from an early age, knowing this is what I like to do, because you're still doing it today.
Yeah, it's been, so back then I worked in accounting departments at privately held companies, you know, accounts receivable, accounts payable, that stuff is normally boring, but I've always been really good with numbers. I've always been good at puzzles. I've always been analytical, but I just didn't find a proper outlet for it until I took that class, and it just kind of all came together. And so I've been in accounting ever since, varying levels, until I finally decided I'm really tired of working for other people's accounting departments. At the early 2013, I was a staff accountant for a local government contractor. I'm in a heavy government area. Not exactly feeling fulfilled. And so I started looking for other opportunities. And I just got to thinking, like, why keep working for other people? Is this something I could potentially do on my own? And so September of 2013, I decided to start my business. I actually started out as a tax franchisee. I learned very quickly.
Oh, really? We've talked about this.
Yes. I learned very quickly that the franchise model was not, at least that franchise model, was not a good fit for me. I basically just one day called them up and was like, I'm done, take it back. I'm like, here you go, handed it back, and I walked away.
What did you learn from that?
I learned that the volume, the high volume model, was not going to be a good fit for me. I did not want to have 2,000 tax clients every year. I wanted to have a smaller, more personal firm. I'd like to say that I got that right when I started my own, like truly my own firm, but I very quickly found myself on that same hamster wheel. And so it took me a few years to really get it to the point where it is now, where we're not so high volume.
What was the intent? Were you going to do accounting? What sparked that, like, other than tax?
I'd already had a handful of bookkeeping clients by that point because I started building the bookkeeping practice while I was still with that tax franchise. Even to this day, I enjoy doing bookkeeping. A lot of CPAs won't do bookkeeping, but I enjoy. Hand me a bank feed with 1,000 transactions, my cup of coffee, and like some good music on the radio, and I'm happy. I can take care of that all day long.
What kind of music?
I mean, it depends. I have a very eclectic music taste, but right now my current favorite is Zach Bryan. I'm blowing, I'm wrecking. Like, his album is pretty much on repeat.
He's a poet. He's wise beyond his years. So you got some Zach Bryan on and you're doing some QuickBooks. You're messing around in there and you're doing a lot of this work early on, right? Did you have any employees?
At the beginning, I had one employee on the tax side.
Okay.
Yeah. So she's been with me the whole time. She was with me at that tax franchise and then she followed me when I left. And she's still with me to this day, 11 years later.
Are you guys pals? Are you guys friends?
She's like family to me. As long as she wants a job, she has a job. She gets what she wants. Her name is Sharon.
Sharon gets what Sharon wants, and you give her a very good job. She probably feels the same way you do about bookkeeping and about all of this, right? She loves what she's doing?
She does. And, you know, before we started this, I made a comment about how sometimes it's hard to find employees who act like owners, but Sharon is, she's a better ambassador for my own money than I am. Like, she's amazing. She's everything.
That's how I feel about my team, too. Shout out to all the accountants out there that we have working for us. I understand you also have your son working for you, which is beautiful. We're going to talk about that, too. But kids these days, they're very flighty and they don't sit still. That's what I've noticed about the people that I've hired. They jump from job to job pretty quickly, sometimes not even making it a year. Have you experienced some of this?
I have. Recently, in fact.
Yeah, we'll get into that. But shout out to Sharon. She's killing it over there. You have a physical office?
We do still have a physical office. Sharon is really the only employee who works from the office. She just doesn't want to work from home. So as long as Sharon wants a place to work, there will be an office for her to go to. But the rest of my team is fully virtual.
Okay. Do you go into the office or do you
work from home? Every once in a while to see Sharon.
So early stages of the firm, was it just bookkeeping clients or did you start taking on some tax too or do the taxes for the bookkeeping clients?
It was tax and bookkeeping. Okay. Some just one or the other and some were both.
And as you say in your title, pro tax and accounting, you do both. We're your end-to-end service provider. You don't have a separate bookkeeper and then a separate tax preparer. Then they get into fights every year and can't get along.
Exactly.
Now you can handle all of it. Mm-hmm. One-stop shop. Yeah. That's dope. What kind of clients were you taking on?
We then and still to this day focus on service-based businesses. I don't want to deal with manufacturing. I'm not a fan of dealing with inventory.
Okay. You know, so service-based. Give me some examples.
Contractors, electricians, plumbers, class A contractors, class BC, hair salons, web designers.
This might be why you were a great fit for using FreshBooks because a lot of these service-based businesses are using a tool like FreshBooks because it's super easy to invoice out of, super easy to get paid, and that's their primary motivation. So are you also finding clients through FreshBooks too? Are there some synergies there, and when did you start using a tool like that?
I'm trying to think. So I was on the FreshBooks Partner Advisory Council for, I think, 3 years, and it was during that time that I started exploring FreshBooks as a potential tool for our firm. We do have several clients on FreshBooks. I do get referrals from the FreshBooks accountant partner team from time to time. And so they've been a great resource. And those business owners are used to doing some of the work themselves, which most of my clients don't do their own books at all. So that's been interesting for me, learning how to work with people who are a little more in their numbers and who are a little more in touch with what's really going on and who want to have those conversations because some business owners don't.
So in early stages, was that one of your tools or were you primarily using QuickBooks?
We were using primarily QuickBooks.
QuickBooks. Okay. Were you finding any clients through QuickBooks or you were getting most of your clients locally? How are you finding clients?
I'm trying to think, like I was having this conversation the other day and I don't know that I've really ever gotten any referrals from the ProAdvisor site. So
It's too overpopulated.
I think so.
We never did either. There's just too many pro advisors out there.
Yeah.
That you got to really stand out.
And so early days, my firm was still in person. You know, we operated the normal brick and mortar. So I did a lot of local networking events, and that's how I met a lot of business owners. And so most of our business came from just me out there networking in my community. And so a lot of our clients were local to us at that time.
Okay, cool. As you grew, how about experiencing some of your first hires besides just you doing a lot of, were you still signing off on all the work as Sharon a CPA?
She's not a CPA. So yeah, I was still looking over.
At what point, let's fast forward to hiring your first employees outside of Sharon. How did you find them?
So my second hire was somebody that I worked with. She was an employee of that tax franchisor. She was a corporate employee. And so I came to know her in that way. And when I got to the point where I'd onboarded several kind of higher end clients that needed more than my two person team could manage, I reached out to her and made her an offer, and she left that corporate job and came to work for my firm. So that was my second hire.
Cool.
Yeah.
And then at what point did you decide that you wanted to acquire another firm, and what brought that on?
Well, I was at a point where I wanted to kind of accelerate my growth. I wanted to continue to grow. I was having a hard time finding good, experienced people. And I tried a number of avenues for recruiting and just wasn't really getting anywhere.
Was it a talent acquisition? Was it potentially to acquire the employees of the firm as well?
That was definitely part of it. So I only focused on firms that had teams that had low owner hours, which would be evidence that the team was used to kind of running themselves, managing themselves. So that was a pretty high priority criteria for me. Yeah.
Cause that's what I typically see too, is people hard time managing growth and hard time hiring, very hard time hiring, especially in this climate that we're in with this pipeline issue. It's almost like an aqua hire. I've seen that as well too, where we acquire a firm for the talent. We all need to grow. We all need to show signs of growth. So what was after this, like your firm, your target size, or what was your growth goals?
Good question. I probably should have had that better fleshed out. So at that point, my firm was at about the 500K mark. Mm-hmm. We were at about 500,000 in revenue, and I had a team of four. The firm I ultimately acquired had six team members. So we a little more than doubled in size and a little more than doubled in revenue. I was focusing on firms that were under $1 million in revenue because I knew what I could afford to pay. And so what I could afford to pay really drove the search. Like that was criteria number one. Right. And then the rest of the
you got your way to a million, though. That was the cash injection, too. She sounded like you smiled when you said when I said the million mark. Is that?
I mean, that sounds sexy, right? Like when you start your business, I feel like $1 million is that first big milestone. You want to get to 500K, then you want to get to that $1 million mark. It just sounds sexy as hell. So it was definitely on my mind.
But that's always like aspirational goals, right? Because 500 is hard to get to when you're starting from nothing.
For me, anyway.
It's very hard to continue that growth rate and also bring people in if there aren't clear systems and processes for everybody in place. Tell me about your systems and processes and how they're evolving now that you've acquired a whole other practice that's as big as yours.
That was the struggle, and we're actually still in it. So we're, 8 months post-acquisition, and we had the way we did things, the way they did things, and now we just tried to merge it all together, right? So it's been a little bit messy, just trying to get everything plugged in. I would say the firm that I acquired, their processes were a little bit ahead of where mine were. The previous owner had implemented EOS a couple of years earlier. Ooh. So the things I was working on in my practice, they were already there. And so what really ended up happening was my existing team kind of got plugged into that team instead of the other way around. But with that came some challenges. You know, I had four people, she had six people. Now we're a team of 10. We went from being in person where we could see each other at least once a week and collaborate in person to a virtual team spread over five states, figuring out how to navigate people and feelings and maintain culture, all while changing processes and trying to get everyone blended together. It has been a long 8 months.
Oh, while trying to hold it all together too. Yeah. You got a lot of round numbers you're working with. So that's sort of easier. You got 10 people, you got $1 million firm. At this stage, you're the 100% owner of this new practice. Is that right?
Yep.
this new million-dollar practice has become your burden or cross to bear or what? Let's hear it.
$1 million sounds great, but I was actually more profitable at 500K than I was at the end of 2020.
How about that? I believe that, and yeah. I've experienced those ups and downs. How are you handling the stress, Andrea?
I don't typically let it get me down too much, right? Every day is a new day.
Yeah.
I am pretty good at compartmentalizing.
You're always pretty positive.
I feel incredibly lucky to be where I am because I still wake up and pinch myself every day. Like, this is really happening. This is my life. It's not always easy, that's for sure. My focus for 2024 is on just getting really efficient. I want to make sure that I've got the right people in the right seats. That $1 million sounds great, but I want that to be at a 40% margin. And so until I get there, I'm just going to be laser focused on getting efficient, making sure I have the right people, tightening up processes, just really focusing on making this business run smoothly.
Did you adopt EOS for everybody? And how's that been?
We have not fully adopted EOS. So the previous owner had started it. At one point, I believe she brought in an implementer and they were working through full implementation. I have actually never worked with an implementer. So I was kind of self-implementing EOS, which I don't know if you've ever tried that. It's not
particularly. I had an implementer.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the implementer, what that does is it really holds everybody accountable, including you. Yeah. And that's the way I felt. So I always felt like I was doing homework for them. And I was doing things for them, but it was really for me.
Right.
That's it. And if I could let you in on a secret, EOS is the reason I've been able to get out of my practice. And Traction's a great book. You should read it. Students, it should be required reading here at Accounting High. Maybe it will one day. So you've got this practice that you've kind of fused together. Some wires might be frayed, but you're trying to keep everything plugged together. I could only imagine that takes a good 2 cycles. And that's probably 2 years. At what point did your son start working with you? Because I just started seeing him around. And how did that work out?
He started working for me, I want to say it was February or March of 2020. So right before COVID hit, he ended up changing schools. And so he was back in the area. So I put him to work at the firm. And he started out with the crappiest job we had, which is the front desk. So he worked the front desk because we still had clients coming in person at that point. He answered phones, accepted tax documents, scanned, made appointments, like the worst job in a tax office, I think. And that was his job.
Was that intentional? Or don't say it's the worst because he's got to learn. Somebody's got to do it, right?
Exactly. Like that was the position, that was the need I had at the time. And so that's the place we plugged him in.
It's the stuff you didn't want to do.
Exactly. Nobody wanted to do it. So, you know, so sometimes it gets to roll
down.
He
needs a job. How much did you pay him?
$12 an hour.
Ooh, yeah. All right. No, now you're giving me a, now what is he doing? Is he in college? Is he still working as well at the front desk or what's the...
Yeah, so when he was at the front desk, we also had him just kind of data entering into tax returns to help out. And I noticed he was just really... I mean, data entry is not that hard, but he was asking questions that were 3 or 4 steps ahead of where we had taught him about that tax return. So he was seeing what he was putting in and thinking ahead of what it affected on the tax return. And he was asking questions. And so I had my aha moment, like, this is my kid. Yes. Like, I could feel the excitement. And so we still had him working on some more simple 1040 tax returns. We gave him a couple of bookkeeping clients, like simple, really write-up services, right? Like after the fact bookkeeping, same thing. He was asking questions. You know, he would look at the P&L and he would ask questions that, in my opinion, were beyond what we had taught him. He was thinking through, what should it look like? He could spot errors, which I don't know if you've ever trained a newbie bookkeeper with no accounting background, but that's not easy to be able to, you know, scroll through a P&L and be like, hey, that number doesn't look right. Oh, it was like all the
things. He's your blood. He's your kid. Does he express that same love for this stuff as you did early on?
He does. And he's now a bookkeeping manager at my firm. I've got 2 bookkeeping managers and he's one of them. So he's running a little team of bookkeeping. He's got a whole roster of clients assigned to him that he's in charge of. Some of our bigger clients, in fact. And he does really well at it. Like, he's so smart and just, that analytical, like puzzle solving. He's just really good.
Well, you've encouraged me because I'm excited about my daughter's expressing a lot of interest in accounting. So I'm not directly trying to influence her, but hey, we're influences to our kids, whether we like it or not. We know this. And so now you're showing that it could be a proven success. He did the grudge work. He did everything. Are you still paying him $12 an hour?
No. Okay. No, he's graduated from that.
But you're also paying for a lot of his stuff, too. I'm sure you're paying for his college and things
like
that.
Well, like, he's 26 now, so he's a grown man now. He's
Okay. Yeah. Now let's talk about this newly... we're going to call it an amalgamation? Are we going to call it an acquisition again? Or a merger?
It's like an aqua-merger.
I don't know what the word is for it. It's a merge-ition.
Okay,
a merge-ition. Somebody that our students may know, he's been on the show. He was the moderator for our EA and CPA debate. He is both an EA and a CPA. He's Jeremy Wells, CFO, CPAEA. He's got a lot of other letters.
Yeah.
He's a great guy. I like him. I just saw him at QuickBooks Connect. Tell me about this. How did this come about, and what does the future hold?
So I was actually on the podcast that he recorded with Chris Hervishon. It turned out I was their last episode. They went out with a bang.
Oh, that is right. I do remember that. Yes,
I didn't know at the time that was going to be their last episode, but that was like, we had interacted on social media. That was my first time really getting to talk to him. And at one point I put out on Twitter or X or whatever you want to call it now, a tweet about how I love the idea of partnering with somebody, but I was also terrified by the idea of partnering with somebody. And so he reached out to me and said he felt the same way. And that started the conversation. We started talking about what does he like to do and what doesn't he like to do? What do I like to do and what I don't like to do? I was like, I just want to run my company. I don't want to do another tax return. And he's like, I only want to focus on tax. I don't really want to run a company anymore. And it just made sense, right? Like, the more we talked, the more it seemed like our needs and wants aligned, our firms aligned really well.
How does that change the mindset of an employee that is now partially an owner too? What are your hopes and aspirations for this? Because this could be something new that others consider doing.
Yeah, so I think I shared with you that I was having trouble with that tax manager level staffing. I had had some turnover there. My last tax manager quit on December 27th, which heading into tax season was a big panic moment. And that really accelerated the conversations with Jeremy. But what I'm probably most excited about, and this is the first time I've ever had a partner. I've always been the 100% owner of my firm. So it is definitely a mindset change for me. I have to remember that there's somebody else's opinions I have to factor in. But at the same time, there's somebody else's opinions I get to factor in, right? It's not only have to, but it's I get to.
You get to.
I don't have to make all the decisions unilaterally anymore. I can put some of it on somebody else and just let them help shoulder the burden. So this all went down at the beginning of last week. So it's only been two weeks.
That's hard for us. You said one thing there. Let them help.
Yeah, that is hard.
Sometimes it is hard, especially for us that have been managing and doing very well. And it took a lot for us to get where we're at. Letting people help is sometimes hard for us. We're used to shouldering those burdens.
Even when you know you need the help, and delegating it and then letting it happen without you is really hard. But he has a vested interest in making this firm run more smoothly, making it more efficient, making it more profitable, right? Like, all along, even though I had employees who cared, it was ultimately my sole responsibility. And now I have somebody else whose focus is on the same stuff. So now we've got two people rowing in the same direction instead of just me. Like, I posted not that long ago, like, I'm on the cusp of this really, like, I'm on the cusp of greatness. I can feel it, and I feel it even more now. I'm completely.
You've always felt like that. That's a good feeling to have, and it's a good way to live life. You get to do these things. It doesn't feel like a burden, doesn't sound like a burden. And we've seen a lot of each other since that 2022 encounter because this community is pretty tight. Speak to me a little bit about that. This is what happened to me with Zero back in 2017, 2018. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like this is what happened with you with FreshBooks too over the past 4 years.
100%. So before Toronto in 22, that was what, September of 22. Before that, I didn't know any other firm owners. I didn't have any firm owners that I could run ideas by. I didn't have all these text groups happening. I had nobody. So it was very lonely. I was doing things in my firm. I didn't have a community. I went to that meeting in Toronto for FreshBooks. I met all of you amazing folks. You know, you, Niall, there were a whole bunch of people there. Kristen Keats, there were a bunch of people. Brian Clare, Josh Lance. Shout out to Josh.
There's some peace, homie.
I got to like get plugged into this, and y'all already all knew each other, and there was just me by myself who didn't know anybody, but I got plugged into this amazing community of accounting firm owners. The changes
in
my
business.
You were
pretty witty though. You fit your way into our crew pretty easily. You were very outgoing and stuff. It was fun.
It was a good time. And the changes in my business since September of 22, I can't even count them. It's a complete 180. So I credit a lot of where I am right now with the community, the accounting firm owning community that I've been lucky enough to find myself plugged into.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's not luck because you put yourself out there and you made yourself available for FreshBooks to pull into their partner community. And obviously, there's countless people that you can thank and have that. But just having the gratitude for that and for everybody around you is one of the reasons why, you know, community is so important. You're bouncing ideas, big ideas, things that you're doing, and you're getting immediate feedback. And the same thing with social networks. You've met a lot of these people in person, so you know them, and you have some, I say it all it takes is about 3 days to be with somebody, and they're my best friend for life. Like, if you could spend 3 days with somebody, it's like you kind of feel like you know everything about it. That's the way I feel. But at the same time, now you can take that experience that you had with them in person and it bounce things off of it, and it feels like you're still in the same room with everybody in a lot of ways. Tell me some of your early experiences with that.
It does kind of take it to the next level. You know, granted, they are pretty large text groups, but it's just a lot more personal than putting a tweet on X or posting on Facebook. And just as an example of the power of being with a group like that, when I was working through this acquisition process, my lender, everything just kind of stalled. My lender was just not getting it done. And so one day, I mean, it had been 3 or 4 months and I had made no progress on getting this loan closed. I went to one of those text groups and I said, I need a new lender. Who do y'all have? And Michael Lee connected me with who I ultimately ended up working with. And literally 45 days later, the deal closed. That I still don't know that the acquisition would have ever happened without me having access to that group of people, because literally one text, one response, 45 days later, the loan closed. So it's
wow.
Powerful, right? Like,
yeah,
amazing things happen. And I would say that I'm an introvert. I'm very shy around people I don't know. I don't go up to people I don't know and talk, even now. I just am not good at it. But y'all have been so welcoming and friendly that you make it easy. And I've somehow managed to elbow my way into this amazing group of people, and all these cool things have happened as a result of it. So if you feel isolated and on an island, you need to reach out to other accounting firm owners, because having those people in your network, just incredible things can happen for you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's always a good time at these conferences. What were some of your favorite conferences that you've been to in the past couple of years?
So I'm really new to the conference circuit. QuickBooks Connect 22 was only the second accounting conference I'd ever been to in my whole life. And then I went to Unique CPA Bridging the Gap in July of 23. I think it was in July of 23. So that was only my third conference ever. And then QuickBooks Connect in 23. I actually got to speak at that, which was a highlight of my whole entire life. That experience was everything for me.
Did you ever see yourself as wanting to speak?
No, but now that I have gotten a taste of it, I love it. Y'all are not going to be able to shut me up. If you give me a stage, I'm taking it.
Also a recurring theme with a lot of accountants. And that's what these applications have afforded us the opportunity. They've given us a stage, and they've created these conferences for us to gather and for us to have that connection and that community. I love the conferences. And it wasn't until I started going with ZeroCon, and they gave us the tickets to go. It encouraged us to go. And I probably wouldn't have spent the money on the tickets, but you know, we're accountants. They figured out a way to give me some tickets, and I took a couple of my teammates there, one of the early ZeroCons, and it was amazing, unforgettable experience. So while you're going to these, did you start seeing other accountants like you speaking and think, I could do that?
I did. It still amazes me that people even want to hear what I have to say. It just trips me out. Like, it's
you're
so
on a
cool.
podcast now. Yeah, you've been on several.
So yeah. Weird. Yeah. So it just kind of like, I think it was, hearing their sessions and then having the ability to get to know some of them personally and realizing they're struggling with the same exact things I am. Yes, they're up on stage, but no, they don't have it all figured out yet. They've got a lot figured out, and a lot of them are further along on their journeys than I am. But when you get to talk to people and you get to know them on a personal level, you realize they don't have every single thing figured out. There are still changes they're making in their own businesses, even though on stage they look like they've got it all put together. And so that made me think, like, okay, I don't have to be perfect and have all the answers to be able to be up there and share my experiences with people.
So that's great that you were able to experience that. And it's all just spiraling upward, I guess. All of these extra connections and meeting new people, then it creates new opportunities and new connections. Everything is positive if that's the way you're looking at it. You get to do all these things. And it's
absolutely.
What's the one, like, what's some of the habits that you keep? Meditation is one of them that I have to do in order to keep positive. Sleep is another one. I got to work out. I got to do some active things. What are some physical things that you do to try to?
I take the weekends. So I'm trying to get really good about taking weekends off. I don't know if you know, but my husband and I don't live in the same place. So we really only see each other on the weekends. And if I'm working all weekend, then the only time I get to spend with him, I spend working. So I've become really intentional about taking weekends off so that I can spend time with him. And we go out and, you know, we go hiking, we go running, we go to breweries. That's our thing. So
you create space.
When I'm having a tough week.
So you're not overworking yourself. Is that right?
Exactly. Okay. I make myself take weekends off. But I mean, you've met me. I'm generally a pretty positive person. Even on the days when I'm thinking like, this is super hard and I'm not exactly sure why I did this, I still feel very lucky to be where I am. And so I just remind myself every day that I get to wake up and actually wake up and put my 2 feet on the floor is a good day, right? Like, I'm lucky to have that. So I just focus on that. When times are really hard.
So that's the mantra.
Yeah. I just put my 2 feet on the floor. I stood up out of my bed this morning. Not everyone can do that. Feel pretty lucky. I get to work with my kid. My younger son just got engaged and he's got amazing things going. Like, there's just a lot of really good things happening in my life. And so I just focus on all that.
Gratitude.
Yep.
And appreciation for everything. I think that's the mantra. Not everybody gets the opportunity to even think about an acquisition or a merger or any of that. You've grown, you've leveraged your business too, and you've grown it to a certain point that now you can speak. You're leveraging it to talk about your experiences and how you've run your business. So you're on the escalator and you're up at the top and somebody else is just coming in and you're showing them the way.
So much fun.
Yeah, yeah. Share with me some of the, what got you through some of the harder times? Running the practice, you just had somebody leave. They were only working for you for 6 months. How do you get through something like that?
I will tell you, that was a difficult phone call. I got that phone call on a Friday afternoon right before New Year's Day, right before tax season. It was my tax manager. So that
when
was...
It rains, it pours.
It does. For about 20 minutes, I just kind of sat there a little bit shell-shocked and then immediately jumped into action. I emailed Jeremy like, hey, we need to talk sooner now than later. Let's talk about what this might look like. I reached out to a couple of people that I had interviewed a few months before for that position. So I gave myself about 20 minutes to really kind of have like a poor, poor, pitiful me, right? Like my little pity party, and then jumped into action. And it was a Friday afternoon right before New Year's Day. So not a lot of action could happen, but everything I could do, I did. I reached out to those people. I reached out to Jeremy. I set wheels in motion. And then I just had to kind of sit back and wait for the holiday weekend to pass.
You're a problem solver, and you probably couldn't sit with those problems for too long. You had to find a plan B or a solution.
Yeah. I think one thing you get really good at when you're a business owner is pivoting, right? Like, you have to be really good at rolling with the punches and then pivoting. You don't have the luxury of just sitting back and waiting to see what happens. And so that was a good moment for me, because when that tax manager put in her notice, even then, which felt like the worst thing that could possibly happen in that moment, even then, I was like, you know what? But I'd still rather be doing this than working a W-2 job for somebody else. So it was kind of a validation for me that I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing.
Yeah. So that was cool. Yeah. Well, and it keeps everything exciting, and it makes you appreciate the slow times too. Would you say you're better at wartime or peacetime?
Well, I don't know that I really ever had peacetime yet. I would love to experience it soon, hopefully. I would normally not say that I'm very good in a crisis, but when it comes to like business crises, pretty good at those. I'm pretty good at taking action, but I would really love to experience just some nice, slow consistency so that I can really have something to compare, and then I'll get back to you.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So you need some consistency. Well, you need those weekends. That weekends at least is your separation, so to speak, especially if you're working from home. So tell our listeners and our students, what's next? What's next up in the pipeline for Andrea? Do you have any other big moves you're going to make, or is this the biggest one?
I think there's been a lot, right? The acquisition in May, and then this hybrid merger that just went down at the beginning of last week, like last week, Monday. So I think we're gonna get through tax season. And once tax season is over, Jeremy and I are going to sit down and have some, you know, after action review and really do some good planning. Like I've got ideas of where I want this company to go. And the acquisition was just crazy. There was so much going on that I haven't really had time to work on the business. I've just been in like triage mode. So I'm looking forward to getting past tax season when he and I can sit down and really plan for what this firm needs to look like, what we can accomplish with the team we have, figure out where we're headed. I mean, I've got big goals and I've got a vision and I'm pretty confident I know how to get there, but now it's fine tuning all those inside details that make that vision happen that need to happen.
You're the visionary.
Before I worry about acquiring or merging with anybody else, like I need to get that fine tuning.
Right, good. Good. I like to hear that too. Yeah. A little bit of slowing down after all the big changes and getting everything, getting the foundation rebuilt too. Because, you know, you got two structures while at the same time bringing in a third auxiliary into the mix. Give us one last piece of parting wisdom from Andrea, the $1 million firm owner. 11 people now, right? Or did Jeremy have any employees too? Or is it 11 total?
Okay. Just him. Yeah.
11 employees. Give us some parting wisdom.
Just keep swimming. When things aren't feeling so hot, just take a step back and try to focus on the things that you have accomplished, the things that are going well, the things you are doing right, and then tackle the rest of it the next day. Just give yourself some grace, allow yourself to experience some gratitude, because that feeling can really carry you through some of the garbage that, some of the dumpster fire that it feels like being a business owner is sometimes.
Yeah, that's the mantra too, is to keep that gratitude, give yourself some grace, be patient with yourself. We didn't even talk about like the client work. At what point are you going to try to get out of all of the client work?
I am out of a lot of it. There are still a handful of clients that are on my plate. And I have another bookkeeper starting next week that the rest of those clients are going to get handed off to. I'll still have one or two that I personally work with for a variety of reasons. They're just amazing and I love them and I want to. But the rest of the client-facing work is going to be managed by the managers. I've got tax manager and bookkeeping managers. So I'm almost there. It's been a goal of mine and it's almost there. I have really good managers, which I feel incredibly lucky for. And so now it's me learning how to just let them do what they do best, right? I think you said it once, you just have to get out of your team's way. If you can figure that out, you know, great things can happen. And they are all ready for me to get out of their way. So right now I'm the boss. Like it's me. Hi, I'm the problem. It's me.
So you can, and it's so hard to get out of the way, even when you know you need to, because it's giving up and it's trusting them and it's letting them help and stepping out and realizing they don't need you. And so it's not just going to be with the client work, but it's going to be every other thing that you try to phase yourself out of, because right now you're the mother bear. Everybody needs you. And that's the way you're thinking about it too. It doesn't run without you, but you're going to have to start giving that some of that up and realizing that, yes, I birthed all of this. Yes, I did all of this, but now it's time to let the kids go off and get married in more ways than one. You've learned this in your personal life and now you're learning it in your business too. So you can apply a lot of that knowledge. Dope.
I'm ready-ish.
Yeah, ready-ish. Yeah, you're ready-ish to get out of the way, but you've already, I mean, that's the hardest part, is realizing it and knowing it gets easier in time, as we said earlier in the episode, but you got to get out of your own way first before you can even get out of their way. So you got to see where you're getting in your own way. And that's fun. Yep. That'll be a fun journey. Well, dope. Appreciate you, Andrea.
Yeah. And, thanks for having me.
Class dismissed. Accounting.